Good evening. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the Greater Portland Metropolitan Area, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, Hood River, Oregon, White 7, Washington, in the Willamette Valley, Point South, 100.7, and on the web, KBOO.FM. This is Proverbial Perspectives. I am the host of the third Thursday segment, Celeste Carey, and welcome. We're going to have two diverse but unifying segments, or features, if you will, on Proverbial Perspectives today. One will talk about community radio in Africa and how it seeks to unite people, ideas, and goals and visions. And then we're going to talk with a local community activist and community asset, Craig Fondren, program manager of Sabin CDC, the CDC being Community Development Corporation, and talk about their role, their grant, in the mayor's visioning project. So stay tuned to enjoy some information about building community far and near here on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
A decade ago, almost all broadcasting in Africa was government-controlled, but now most countries permit community radio, participatory local stations that foster positive social change. Hundreds of these stations, as well as groups trying to form stations, are members of AMARC, the Association Mondiale de Radiodiffuseurs Communautaires, or in English, the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters. In April 2005, AMARC held its third Pan-African Regional Conference in Nairobi, Kenya. There, Elizabeth Robinson interviewed radio women from two countries in Southeast Africa, Zimbabwe and Zambia.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world. Produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I'm Elizabeth Robinson. I was attending the Pan-African Community Radio meetings in Nairobi in my capacity as a board member for AMARC, the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters. I was there as a speaker for their conference. And I interviewed two young women who are doing community radio or trying to do community radio in their own countries, which are Zimbabwe and Zambia. And I think at this point in time, Zambia is a much more open society, which you'll hear from the two women who are speaking. And before I interviewed them, as I usually do with people who are living in potentially repressive or violent situations, I'll say, you know, if there's anything you don't want to talk about, please just say so, and we don't have to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Or just say, I can't answer that. That's okay. And the Zimbabwean woman, who I think is 24, said to me when I asked her that, I'm not afraid of Mugabe. Mm-hmm. I think Mugabe is more afraid of me than I am of him.
April 22nd, 2005, Nairobi. I have two of the women with me who spoke yesterday and unfortunately had too little time to tell their stories, so I'm going to ask them to do that today. Okay?
My name is Koliwe Nyoni. I am from Zimbabwe. I work for a community radio initiative called Radio Dialogue, which is found in the second largest city of Zimbabwe called Bulawayo. Why I said community radio initiative is because Zimbabwe is still one of the last countries in Southern Africa to diversify its broadcasting. There still is only one broadcaster, which is our state broadcaster, Zimbabwe Broadcasting Holdings, which is run directly by the government and the Ministry of Information. Last year, the Broadcasting Commission made an announcement that it would diversify its radio broadcasting and invited people to make applications for licenses, but unfortunately nothing has been done since then. So Radio Dialogue is an initiative that started in 2000, and you can imagine by now we're slightly getting a bit agitated. But though we're not transmitting, we are not broadcasting at a large scale, we are doing a bit of work within the community of Bulawayo. We are producing educational cassettes, or cassettes with topical issues that affect the people of Bulawayo. We have representatives or people who have assisted us in our advocacy campaign to educate the people of Bulawayo on what community broadcasting is. They come up with topics from the community, which we then do as a cassette, which would sound like a live broadcast because it has music and it has interviews, it even has a presenter. And now what we do is we distribute these cassettes to the community of Bulawayo, especially what we call our radio dialogue members. And I think our largest member at the moment is the Bulawayo United Passenger Transport Association, which would be the people who carry people into town on their commuter omnibuses. So either way, people still hear and enjoy the cassettes. The demand is really high. Another thing, or another activity that we have started, is our road shows. We go out with the stage, the PA system, number of artists and partner organizations, and go to the community and discuss issues that affect them. It is a very participatory event or program, because we have an MC. He encourages people to come, asks them what community radio is, asks them questions on the issues that we would be discussing. And I think the most popular topics, or the topics we have covered in the past 2 years, HIV/AIDS, looking specifically at stigma and discrimination, and how HIV/AIDS affects the women more than anyone else in the population. We have domestic violence, which was very popular, so we actually had to drag it for about 3 or so months. We've also had something on child abuse, breastfeeding, the state of the roads, thefts, robbers and thefts in the streets. And we work with the Bulawayo City Council as well, so they ask us to run certain programs for them as well.
So radio without the right to broadcast. Okay.
My name is Miriam Shakafuswa. I work for Education Development Center, but I'm managing a project called Zambia Community Radio Project. This came about because when we looked at the community radio stations, most of them did not have logistics or resources to actually get to the people who really need their product, like the people in the villages. So what could we do to work with the community? So we involved the community radio stations. We are working with 7 community radio stations right now. In Zambia right now, we've got more than 10 community radio stations. So when we called them to the meeting, it was agreed that we're going to design the programs ourselves. We're going to do all the recording and just give them a package. So what we do is we go to the village and record the program in the village, and the topics that we look at, HIV and AIDS, care and support, education and health, we look at environmental health, we look at food and nutrition, we also look at agriculture and how people can do it. Why we got on these topics was because HIV and AIDS, we can't just deal with it in seclusion, but include other topics so that people can deal with it more easily. Because when somebody is sick, people need to know that they're not supposed to be stigmatized. They're supposed to feed. So how do they do it? So somebody had to know how to go about it. So what we do is we identify a village that has got something unique going on. And in that village, it could be maybe they're good in home-based care, looking after the sick, looking after orphans, widows. So when we identify such a village, we go there, and first and foremost, they talk about the history of that particular village, what has happened in that village, why did they start a certain program, and how are they sustaining it, or what do they need to sustain that. So we put that program, 1-hour show, on the radio, And when they play it, we get feedback. And from that feedback, people are so excited. They're saying, whoa, we need something like this in our village. And that's exactly what we intended for this program to do, get people's interest to say that we want to replicate something that's going on in this village, in our village. So right now, you know, for this kind of program to succeed, we needed listener groups. So we've got more than 50 listener groups, and we work with other partners. They donated to us radios. These are wind-up radios. Yeah, you know, it's cheap. That way you don't have to buy cells and stuff like that. So really, we get feedback every other month, over 100 feedback. Most of the time, we don't know what to do with the information that we get. But it's less than a year that we started. But it has...
How many listener groups already?
Right now, there are 57. 57, that's in the eastern part of the country. So we had one of the reporters from Leading Daily who got wind of this, and he wrote a very nice feature on it. And people said, well, we want something like this to happen, but we are planning to do that in the rest of the country if we get the resources.
So let me be sure I'm clear. One of you has some official governmental support, and one of you has none. Okay. So one of the things that's really striking to me about Zimbabwe is that particularly women have used resourcefulness to get around the obstruction of the government. Are there restrictions on content? Are there are attempts to restrict your content?
Okay, we have what they call the Broadcast Services Act. It's draconian. It's very repressive. And for any community radio, you can only have a license for 2 years. So that means you have to reapply. Then there's the issue of broadcasting 75% of government's programs. There's the restriction of 75% local content. And then there's the biggest issue now, which comes under the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, which says that anyone who works for a media house or any media house should actually be registered and its journalist accredited. Meaning there's been so many political accusations leveled against Radio Dialogue because right now it would seem we would want to defy the government and we don't think what they're doing is enough. So when we submitted our application to get Radio Dialogue registered, which was about 2 years ago, we never got a response, and we are still waiting to be accredited. So the laws that govern the broadcasting sector now are really repressive. Yes, they do acknowledge community radio, and that's a good thing, but when you look at it in its truest sense, it is not community broadcasting, because once they want to know about who you are, they want to also talk about who funds you, and then they want to charge you exorbitant application fees. And definitely in Zimbabwe, with the state of the economy right now, and you talk about community radio, you're talking about people volunteering, you're talking about non-profit making, but how do you do that when half your employees cannot afford to pay rent, do not have money to come to work, and generally life is not easy in the country? Yeah. And then I would like to comment on the women. You know, I have a great interest with women. I've worked with women. And I would like to let you know that at the moment, the strongest movement against human rights abuses in the country is an organization called the Women of Zimbabwe Arise. I tell you, those women get on the streets and they walk. And when the police come with their batons and their tear gas, those women just sit down. And they talk about basic issues like education, they talk about the elections, but they always look at it from the woman's point of view. They have this popular march that they call the Valentine's Day March. And this past year, its theme was the power of love can overcome the love of power. And that was a very strong message, especially during elections and when you look at what has been happening. So I would like to say the trend has always been the Zimbabwean women are in the lead. And I think given a community broadcasting station, each woman can have a voice. Because I tell you, these women are not the educated sissies. They are the general, simple housewives who go on the streets and say, I can't buy my child a school uniform. We need to change this and that. Yeah.
And the name again of the organization?
The Women of Zimbabwe Arise, WOZA. It's popularly known as WOZA.
Does WOZA have another meaning?
Well, it means come, but it's just an abbreviation.
All right, thank you. And Miriam?
Oh, yes, like Koliwa was saying, the women are at the forefront, actually, in agriculture, the ones who are there. You know, any project in a village, you find that the women are succeeding because there's just something about a woman. A woman just wants to, you know, to say, look, I've been oppressed for a long time, but now I want to rise and show the world that I can make a difference.
This is a question for both of you. There's a sister from Chad who said today in the assembly, we can't only have women talking about disease and other problem situations, that it will all die. And I thought that was a very important statement because we know how rich women's culture is generally. I know that a lot of the focus of community radio here is on development, on poverty alleviation, etc. But how do you, or do you try to bridge both very serious matters, but also to convey the richness of people's lives? Koliwa?
I don't think you can actually separate poverty and people's lives, because when you talk about someone's well-being, you are saying you have enough food, you have enough money to buy clothes, just the basics. We're not saying everything in abundance. So I believe in Zimbabwe it's actually very easy to talk about bread and butter issues and connect them to people's well-being. You go out there and you say, guys, we need to go out and vote. It doesn't matter what the election result is going to be, but it's the fact that you have tried to do something to improve your life. So whatever issue you tackle, in a community, you always have to say to them, I'm saying this because look at the way you're living now, and you don't have to live like this. You don't need to be educated to make a difference, because it's the majority of you that are the people. And if you go in your numbers, it will better all your lives. So I think in the Zimbabwean context, you can never really separate the two. I don't know, maybe it's because we're experiencing, you know, a time where there's too much political problems, economic problems, even social. Because I'll tell you, the fact that the unemployment rate has gone up to 80%, I tell you, the number of teenagers that are smoking is high. The number of HIV AIDS cases is high. Even the number of rape and abuse, you know, in the house, abuse cases. You remember I said the domestic violence issue got so high. You would get a woman saying, my husband comes home very late. He doesn't bring any money home. He earns something, but he doesn't want to come home because what he earns is too little. And when he comes home, I have to ask him, where's the money? Because we have children to think about, which is the well-being, obviously. He loses his temper, he beats up his wife. You know, in our societies, in Zimbabwe, actually, men are always at work. And there's a canteen at work, they're going to eat something. It's the woman who stays at home and has to think of the children coming home for lunch and having nothing to eat. It's the woman who thinks of sending her children to school with nothing in their lunch boxes. So I think this is why women are most affected. So that statement, women, we can't have women being the ones to talk about it all the time. The men, yes, they feel something, but I think women bear the greater brunt.
I think, though, part of what I was hearing is not that women aren't bearing most of the responsibility, but that there are also all of those other rich parts of their lives. Women's storytelling traditions, women as musicians, as artists, as caretakers, those things need, those are sometimes where people take hope. And I thought that was in part what she was saying, but I may have misunderstood that. I don't know.
But, well, in that respect, it makes a lot of sense, because women even have the time to do some of these things. But, you know, I'll be honest with you, we have Radio Dialogue has a self-sustenance program. You know, after we were threatened with the NGO bill, everyone got busy thinking of what can we do to make sure we generate our own income. Now, we have a recording studio, and there are very few women who come and record. Very few girls. You know, you actually have to go out and bring them to the studio. But I think that's a valid point, and we should look at it as, even though there's problems, we shouldn't cry about it all the time. Let's think of something else, you know, get our minds off it for a little while.
For a minute at least, yeah. Miriam, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I just want to add something about women. You know, for a long time, women were always the ones who couldn't speak out. And why was that? Because of the way they were brought up, our traditional and cultural values. We're told not to say if your husband is beating you up, you don't say it in public. If you are hungry, you just pretend you are eating. But after a lot of sensitization, this is how, like radio, the power of radio, they knew that, no, this is wrong. I need to talk to someone. And they are seen to be, you know, getting into this gear where they are just saying, like, this is enough. And somebody from that can see that they are talking too much. It's like they are the ones who are getting affected and the men are not. But the men, like Koliwa said, really, they don't really mind about that. He's eaten at the canteen. So what? He goes home and he thinks the wife will still do it. I think this is why the women are coming out strong and saying that I can't wait for my husband. And this is when I was talking about this women's group. I mean, they're doing literally everything in the village, because they know that if they wait for this man to come and give them food, it won't be there. Yeah.
Let me ask you one other question, and that is, well, you particularly, Koliwa, but both of you are talking about extremely problematic situations, very serious, life and death kinds of things. Tell me where you take hope. What are the things that keep you engaged in the face of some pretty daunting problems?
The fact that we are not the first African country to experience this. I mean, honestly, being at this AMAC conference, I have realized that, for instance, it's taken Kenya so long to have just one community radio station. And you look at countries like South Africa, what they went through. You look at all the other countries with legislation that's repressive, and you know you're not alone in the struggle. It's an African thing. It takes time, but it has to happen. And then with all these stories, you find out it's the people who rise. And then you it's only a matter of time, because the people have to feel something for them to rise. So I think personally I take hope in the fact that Zimbabwean people are slowly trying to make up their minds and say this is the route we're going to take. But change will definitely come. And that's why I'm still in Zimbabwe, and many of my friends left the country. And that's why you find, no matter how much there's bread shortages, fuel shortages, people still line up because they have hope that the fuel is going to come. That I think that we're not alone in the struggle, and I think that's where we get our hope. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I wish I had television right now, because there's a transformation in your face and your eyes that I would like people to be able to see. But we are the audio medium, so they'll have to trust me when I say that. But Miriam, how about you?
Politically, in my country, the only thing that's missing right now is the women representatives in parliament or in in government posts. And this is because women, normally we do not support each other in Africa. And if somebody runs for a higher office like that, you seem to say, well, what can they do there? So I think if we educate everybody, men and women, not women in seclusion, but everybody, that, listen, let's give each other a chance. I mean, the woman is also capable of doing what you can do. I think when we do that, a lot of things are going to change, because now we're going to be looking at what a woman can do. And a woman will be driven to such lengths that I need to work this to perfection, because I want to show people that we are also capable of doing something. And I think right now what is really bringing us down is the HIV and AIDS pandemic. And you can imagine labor is, the people who are supposed to work are dying all the time. So we are thinking, what can we do? What can we do? And we are saying that we need to educate the children today. That five-year-old child, but that child can't go to school because of the infrastructure. There are no schools. The children want to go to school, but the school can just take a limited number of children to school. And if they can't improve on that, then we're still going backwards. We're still going back to the dark ages. I think we need to improve our education system. We need to improve our health system. And just find means, you know, to make sure that this life just goes on. Yeah.
Well, in the last couple minutes, I'd like you to each tell me what you might like people in North America, for example, to hear from you. Is there any particular message you'd like to send?
I would like to say, yes, in Zimbabwe, things are bad. Yes, we have lots of people leaving the country, but I would like them to know that there is a struggle that's going on, and it might take long, but eventually you won't read so much about Zimbabwe. It will be one of those African countries that are actually making it, and I believe that God loves Zimbabwe. Why am I saying that? Because I feel if we were in a country like South Africa now, if we were in the DRC, we would be having a serious civil war. So all the people out there should continue to pray for Zimbabwe, because I know God loves Zimbabwe. Thank you.
Thank you, Kaliwa. Miriam?
Yeah, I think people should realize that there's more to those pictures that they show of hungry children and, you know, meeting together at important workshop conferences like this one. Really, it's just us trying to say, what can we do to improve our livelihoods? But people should really realize that it's not about the corrupt president in the country, but it's about the people. And there are great people in those countries. And they should know that, no, it's not just we're giving out something for those people to do this. You can invest in those people. Who knows? You know, you can just make out another president out of that person. I think people who are privileged, like the Americans, should start thinking of how they can help that little nobody out there, instead of looking at our corrupt leaders. And I believe it's not just in Africa you find corrupt leaders, but there are some of us who are really, I think my son, my daughter, can make better leaders for tomorrow. And I'm saying, give us some education, help us, you know, with our infrastructure, do something for the future child.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you both very much for your time. And I guess to share back with you, I have to say that heaven help us if Americans are going to criticize someone else's leaders. That's my first message. And the second, and this is what I have to say for listeners in the North, we talk about debt forgiveness sometimes in the North. And the reality that I think we should always end with is that the debt should be erased because it was illegal to begin with. This continent has been systematically looted for centuries, and that's what the debt is doing now. So we are directly implicated in the poverty that you're trying to alleviate. So I salute you and your work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Elizabeth Robinson is the International Treasurer of AMARC, the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters, and has a program at KCSB-FM Community Radio in Santa Barbara, California. she interviewed these women broadcasters from Zimbabwe and Zambia during AMARC's Pan-African Community Radio Conference in Nairobi, Kenya, in April 2005, and she shared her recording with Wings. For more about community radio worldwide, check the website www.amarc.org. That's A-M-A-R-C, amarc.org. For more about Wings or to listen online, check our website, www.wings.org. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the anthology Il Dono, The Gift. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city.
Hello everyone, KBOO, your community radio station, invites you to tune in on Sunday, May 21st from noon to 7 p.m. We will be broadcasting live from PECUN headquarters in Woodburn, Oregon with music and interviews. KBOO is partnering with PECUN and the Woodburn community in their efforts to establish their own radio station. PECUN stands for Pineros y Campesinos Unidos del Noroeste. It is Oregon's largest Latino farm labor organization. Live music will be played by the bands Los Enemigos del Silencio, Gérmenes, and the Woodburn High School Mariachi Band. We will be talking with the women of PECUN, as well as musicians, artists, and other people from that community. We would like to invite you to become part of KBOO and get involved in your community. We have opportunities for everyone. Remember to join us on Sunday, May 21st from noon to 7 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM.
Welcome back to Proverbial Perspectives, your public affairs program here on your community connection, KBOO Portland. And we had a golden opportunity to talk about radio in other countries in terms of drawing together the populace, in terms of sharing important information, in terms of creating a common vision. And community radio is a wonderful thing. Music, news, information that are controlled by the people who live and breathe in the country, who shape the country, rather than just by its administrative aspects. Well, we have an opportunity to not only do something similar here in Portland, but with this project to shape the city's administrative aspects. I have with me here today Craig Fondren, who is the Sabin Community Development Corporation Program Manager. And Sabin CDC is a recipient of one of the Visioning, Community Visioning Project Awards. And I'm going to tell you just a little bit about the Community Visioning Project. Some of you have heard of it. Perhaps some of you haven't. The Vision PDX is a city-sponsored community initiative with the goal to create a vision for Portland for the next 30 years and beyond. And this project provides an opportunity for people from all over Portland to share their ideas, their hopes, their vision for the future. Now, we want to get as many folks as we can involved in this because it's supposed to be a community-led visioning and action project. So the idea is to get everyone, including you, to be engaged. How are we going to do this? Well, a lot of different community organizations, community-based agencies, individuals, people with lots of ideas and energy have applied for grants. And these grants have allowed them to shape some type of visioning interplay, some type of interactive community-based, similar to a roundtable or forum event that will allow them to share their ideas and build a future. Why do we need a vision? Well, right now there's a lot more needs than resources, and we need to figure out how to prioritize them. And this is what we can do. This is an exercise you use, kind of like doing a strategic plan, if you will. And it's true, Portland does have a vision. We had a vision planned that was passed about 15 years or so ago. But it's time for something new. It's a new day. That vision plan is out of date, and Portland has grown tremendously since then. We have so many new challenges to our quality of life, our city, the physical infrastructure of the city. It's time to figure out what to do. It's expected to be about a million more people and perhaps, hopefully, many more jobs to come into the Portland metropolitan area within the next 20 years or so. And it could be less than 20 years, given the fact that change happens faster now. What does that mean? Well, that means we have to deal with rising housing costs. We have to deal with population density. We have to deal with shrinking access to community resources. We also have more ethnic diversity than we've ever had in the city's history. And we want to find a way to tap into that strength, that pool of combined knowledge and wisdom, and make it work for us instead of against us. So one of the groups, as I've mentioned, that won an award was the Saving Community Development Corporation. And their project is going to include community forums, one-on-one informational interviews, multimedia tools, community events, online surveys, and a virtual city, including streaming video and audio to reach 750 projected community members. Without further ado, I'd like to invite Craig Vondry here to tell us some more about the Saban Community Visioning Project. Well, it is evening now, so evening.
Great. Thank you, Celeste, for having us here on your show today. And I'm glad you kind of explained what this project is. We should let people know that there were 50-plus volunteers that helped really kind of design this vision. They're from all walks of life, all over our city, many respected people, and they've been charged with this thing of giving back to the city council in April of 2007, something that says, this is what we'd like to see our city look like in the next 30 years. We want it to be inclusive. We want to make sure people in neighborhoods talk to us about how their neighborhoods are. You know, Saban represents about 9 neighborhoods that branch off of Alberta Street. We're now over in the Overlook area. You know, we started as affordable housers, so we've been around for 15 years. We've been getting and on the key of getting information from a community for a very, very long time. So we're kind of fortunate that we did get a vision grant, and we're trying to do and collect the information as painlessly as humanly possible. We also want to make it fun. So we're looking at literally choosing full multimedia to get our message out. And, hey, you're our first.
Well, it's great to be a part of this. I understand that you're not only involved in housing, but one of the things that the Saban has done to create a strong community and improve community communications and networking is to work to close that digital divide, make sure that populations, neighborhoods within the north, northeast parts, well, actually, especially north and northeast parts of Portland, were able to access community computer centers and that you've had some really strong partnerships with other agencies in the city.
We've got great strong partnerships right now. We have 5 sites that are open. We have our enrichment center that is at Martin Luther King and Prescott. And in fact, we have new classes, both in computer technology and in multimedia starting. We're having orientations next week. And at the end of the show, I'm sure Celeste will give you our information. We also have a senior lab. Yes, seniors and technology, it's a great mix. And that's with our partnership with the Urban League of Portland's Multicultural Senior Center, and that's at Martin Luther King and Killingsworth. We have a microenterprise lab that's open to the community, has great information. Those that might need one-on-one business help, we have a patch into the Small Business Administration. So that lab is actually at the corner of 29th and Alberta. That's a partnership with the Black United Fund. We have picked up a new property, and we're going to be doing an adult GED lab, but it'll be really geared towards adults, open in the day, easily accessible. We'll be teaching all kinds of fundamental tools. We'll be doing lots of literacy, of course, technology. There'll be math things. That lab should be actually open. We're shooting for a date in June. And one of our most exciting things is there is a learning portal in town, and we're looking to expand it. Microsoft has been a great partner. We were looking at the Jefferson Cluster, but after a great meeting today, I'm happy to announce, we're actually going to be moving down to Portland State University.
Ah, well, that still means that there's opportunity for the cluster to get involved, to come on board after they get better organized.
Exactly. It's
wonderful.
Open to all the city. We mm-hmm. want young people and adults to get involved in it, and in fact, we're going to be posting a lot of our streaming video, a lot of the answers from the vision questionnaire, a lot of that's going to be going on that portal site, accessible to anyone, anytime.
So let's talk a little bit about this. You've talked a lot about how Sabin has basically established itself as a community asset, has built the conduits and the networks to really be able to hit the ground running for this project. How are you going to reach some of the targeted audience that you have for the project? Are you going to reach them through some of these agencies you've already got established?
Oh, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
We know Portland. In fact, one of the first things we're doing is something with Portland State that we've actually had a University Studies freshman class working on documenting digitally images of people in Portland, about writing, dispelling some of the images people have when they first arrive here. It's a classroom that's 30 students strong. We're actually going to be having an art show where this show will be premiering this last Thursday, May 25th. It's our kickoff for this visioning grant and also for this great project that we've actually done with Professor Jamie Ross. This will be our 4th year doing this. It's an interesting show. It'll be at 3 venues. They'll be located between 14th Place in Alberta and 16th in Alberta. We would love to have you guys come out, look, ask questions about the visioning project. We'll have questionnaires there. There is a rumor that the mayor might come out, but we will have other city people there if you have major questions. We really want to kind of start the ball rolling on hearing from you. We're also training canvassers, digital canvassers. They'll be going out with laptops. They'll be just asking quick questions, getting some input. We're not looking at names, numbers, where you're from. We want information. So that's coming up. Those people will look like you and me. They'll come from all communities.
Oh, that's cool.
They'll be trained in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And your information, again, will be on that portal that we have set up with Microsoft.
So essentially what you're doing is you're going out and you're getting verbal. Yeah, audio interviews from people, and you'll be streaming these over the portal. But I understand you're also going to do 2-minute video and audio hotspots here during your project.
This to me is exciting. See, I get to buy new equipment when we get to doing this. We're actually going to be setting up wonderful cameras, actually, that I'm going out to buy tomorrow, that at our 4 centers. You can pop in. If you don't want to write anything down, you can do a 2-minute video and share your vision of the city that we can stream, we can save, we cannot save, but you can have your voice and your face heard.
Oh, that's wonderful. And so how would people get this feedback? Would they go online?
get it, or will you be broadcasting it over any local television networks?
It's actually going to be on SabinCDC.com.
Okay.
Or .org.
So that's Sabin, S-A-B-I-N.
.org.
Okay.
That'll be your patch into the portal.
Okay.
We're also looking at having some of the results on Portland Online, which is a city site.
That's the city site for information about the Visioning Project, too.
Since we're working with PCC as one of our partners, they actually have some cable access time. We're hoping to share some of this with the PCC cable access, Tualatin Valley, and Mount Hood. So, yes, you will see some of that. And we're also trying to do community forums where people can sit one-on-one. We can bring city people in. We can bring our legislators in. They can hear your voice about how you see this city and how you feel where we're at and where we need to go and what tools we need to do to get there. We're looking to actually share that on cable access as well.
So what is really wonderful about this and makes it a little bit different from the other projects is that people will have this information captured, and anyone in the city will have a chance to see it and hear it. And so rather than just a one-on-one, one-dimensional conversation where people sit and they exchange ideas, and that's good because we're there and you can get the synergy, the whole event will be recorded and captured and archived not only for the good moment here but for the future moment.
Future moments. We're also looking to do a short film. We're looking to do a half hour out of everything we can pile. We think, what's the best way to get a point across to our city? Let's show them a film. Show them
a
film of Portlanders giving the voice that the city of Portland needs to hear. So we're looking to shoot for that being ready, we hope, by April of 2007, because we're going to be shooting through the rest of this year and hoping to do editing by next spring.
So if the ordinary person wanted to take part in one of these community forums, where would they go? When is one of the first of the forums is coming?
Actually, our first kickoff is going to be the last Thursday, where we're actually going to start taking information from people that really want to come to forums. We're actually having a 15th anniversary celebration. So we're doing a week of things. In that week, which will be in August, we're looking to have a couple of forums where no one's going to be on Alberta Street. We're hoping our friends at Kennedy School will allow us to have one there as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing senior forum with the Urban League.
So over at the Senior Multicultural Center?
At the Senior Multicultural Center, so okay. That it's convenient, open to seniors. Seniors that can't get there will actually have rides that will bring them.
That's wonderful, and this is right in the heart of the community. It's right off of Killingsworth and Martin Luther King.
Right, and okay. We're looking to have a youth forum at Jefferson High School.
Oh, excellent.
We need the voice of that future that's coming to us. We'll also this summer hopefully have a great, great, great forum at the new Moriarty Arts Building at our PCC Cascade campus.
Well, that's one of your major partners.
One of our major partners, and we're really looking to have that senior high schooler to that college graduate's point of view. We know that these are the people that are going to start pushing that change, and we really need their voice. I don't think we hear it enough.
Now, one of the things that's really wonderful about this whole opportunity, and I can't stress it enough, is the chance for people to give their input about things that they feel impacts quality of life, issues of perception or reality of things like crime or economic access, building up the neighborhood. And one of the things that those of us who both work in the Inner Northeast or live in the Inner Northeast have noticed is that this is one of the more volatile in terms of potential for change parts of the city than any. It's one of the more diverse elements of the city. It has one of the most intense changes in culture going on right now. Not a culture clash, but a way of melding a new culture that's going to be receptive and responsive to everybody's needs. So if you live in this area, this is your chance to really come forth and let your ideas be known. You know, is what they say, you have to put up, or if you don't put up, shut up. And we want you not to shut up, but to speak up.
We also want people to understand what we're doing with this particular project is we want to teach our community, all of those neighborhoods, how to use technology as an empowerment tool, how to really take what we're doing that, and when I say we will train you, All of our classes are free. We will train you in multimedia to be able to work with us to get this message out so that we, as you said, we have an archive over a period of time of how this community speaks for itself.
That'll be really fabulous. Now, I understand May 25th is kind of the kickoff. That's at the end of the month. And that, again, is part of the last Thursday.
It's that Alberta Street Art Walk last Thursday. We're actually going to have our Portland State freshman class come out with their project. We're going to have it at three venues, the Alberta Street Cooperative Grocery Store, which is on the corner of 15th and Alberta, at Fuel Cafe, which is on the corner of 14th Place in Alberta, great coffee shop, and Helzer's Restaurant, which is on the corner of 16th and Alberta.
And so people can come in and have a chance to meet and greet and discuss.
And discuss, ask questions, and you also have a wonderful art walk to continue having a great evening. We're a neighborhood now that's full of wonderful restaurants and a great sense of culture and happiness. Yes, it is crowded on last Thursday, but isn't that what we're about? Getting out, getting about, learning about each other?
Creating a shared experience that can lead to a common vision. So this is a great opportunity to take part in one of the many visioning projects that's coming out of the mayor's visioning project and to speak up about the things that you care about in your city, to find out more about how you can impact and create a new, if you will, not strategic plan, but strategic vision, if you will, for Portland. Any ending words, finishing words?
I would love for people to get a hold of me.
And how can they do that?
Sabin CDC. The phone number is 503-287-3496, extension 25. Please leave me a message because we're kind of busy, end of school. We do a lot of education. I'm in and out, but I always return my calls. We want to hear from you. Let's put you on a list. Let's get you in a class. Let's just ask you a couple of questions. We'd like to hear how you vision Portland for the next 30 years.
And if you're an enterprising young person and you think you have what it takes to be part of the digital recording and archiving team, especially be sure to contact Mr. Fondren. And his number again is
503-287-3496. Extension 25. And remember, this can count for your community service before you graduate.
Oh, especially so. Well, thanks so much for coming down. And I want to tell people, if they're really curious about the Visioning Project and they want to know who some of the other grantees are and how there's going to be a dynamic intermix of different projects, they might focus on different venues of communication, go to portlandonline.com. That's one word for portlandonline.com. Click on the picture of Mayor Tom Potter, and you will notice that he has in the left-hand column there, Vision PDX. Click on that, and it will give you so much information about why Portland is doing this, how Portland is doing this, where Portland is doing this, and how you can be a part of the whole project. So thank you so much. This has been Proverbial Perspectives. Celeste Carey, the host of the Third Thursday session. Be sure to stay tuned and listen to Proverbial Perspectives all the time. We have programs on three of the Thursdays of the month, and then we also have Voices of the Middle East. So you have an opportunity to hear a diverse and rich ethnic perspective of life here in Portland and globally. Stay tuned. We have coming up momentarily Reggae Bob. And he will be talking about how we can all have a good time. This has been your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the greater metropolitan area, 91.9 in the Gorge, and in the Willamette Valley, 100.7, and on your web, kboo.fm.
Hello, everyone. KBOO, your community radio station, invites you to tune in on Sunday, May 21st, from noon to 7 p.m. We will be broadcasting live from Pecun headquarters in Woodland, Oregon, with music and interviews. Cable is partnering with the Coon and the Woodburn community in their efforts to establish their own radio station. The Coon stands for Pineros y Campesinos Unidos del Noroeste. It is Oregon's largest Latino farm labor organization. Live music would be played by the bands Los Enemigos del Silencio, Gérmenes, and the Woodburn High School Mariachi Band. We will be talking with the women of the Coon, as well as musicians, artists, and other people from that community. We would like to invite you to become part of Cable and get involved in your community. We have opportunities for everyone. Remember to join us on Sunday, May 21st from noon to 7 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM.